in Japan, triggering the triple meltdown of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactors and the start of the worst nuclear disaster the world has seen so far. But as the Japanese government and Tokyo Electric Power Company try to make you forget Fukushima ever happened, or make you think it's been handled, it is the children who are suffering the most. Child thyroid cancer rates in and around Fukushima continue to skyrocket, but official repression of information is also growing. So when you hear what one committee of the Fukushima Prefectural Health Study is doing,
the evaluation committee is pursuing other clever tactics to try and make it seem like there are fewer cases of thyroid cancer. They're removing patients from the framework of the program and making the results completely confidential, citing privacy issues. They are even talking about shrinking or abolishing the program altogether.
Well, when you hear about government dirty tricks like that and realize that the health and safety of children is what's at stake, you understand how the people of Japan, and indeed all of us, are in the one seat that we all share, the nuclear hot seat. Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we present our annual Nuclear Hot Seat Fukushima Anniversary Special, Voices from Japan. This year, we focus on the ever-increasing numbers of children in and around Fukushima Prefecture who are suffering from thyroid cancer, a known radiation-related disease. We'll hear interviews exclusive to this program with Chikako Chiba, a representative of the Ajisai no Kai support group for families with children who have thyroid cancer; Toshio Yanagihara, an attorney who, since shortly after the start of the Fukushima nuclear disaster, has been seeking to protect the rights of Fukushima families with children to live in a safe environment; and Dr. Misai Fujita, medical director of the Tarachine Iwaki Citizens Radiation Monitoring Center. And we'll be given context and clarity on all the issues involved by Voices from Japan co-producer Beverly Findlay Kaneko of Families for Safe Energy. We'll also try and shoehorn in Numbnuts of the Week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness. And we will be having more honest nuclear information than what was visible on the red carpet at the Oscars. All of this coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, March 6, 2018, and here is the Nuclear Hot Seat Fukushima Anniversary Special, Voices from Japan. But first,
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
When last week's winter storm bomb Cyclone Riley barreled down on New England, bringing with it massive flooding and killer winds, did the Nuclear Regulatory Agency take the prudent path and preemptively shut down the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth, Massachusetts, at the foot of Cape Cod? Don't be ridiculous! Not only did they not shut down Pilgrim, which the NRC readily admits is one of the three worst-run nuclear reactors in the country, and that experienced a dangerous forced shutdown during January's winter Hurricane Grayson, but the NRC went MIA, leaving behind a recorded message saying, "The NRC is closed for inclement weather." So let's get this straight. The regulators were called on account of rain, but the dangerous substandard nuclear reactor wasn't? Ah, but that meant that the NRC did not have to issue event or status reports about what might be going wrong. Fingers in the ears, eyes closed, la 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 la, we can't see it, we can't hear it. No responsibility. Well, you squeaked by on that one by the skin of your teeth, guys. And that's why, once again, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
We'll have this week's Voices from Japan Fukushima Anniversary Special in just a moment. But first, 7 years after the start of the nuclear disaster, the people of Fukushima don't have a lot of outlets to share the truth of what's happening to them. Nuclear Hot Seat is one of the few. Every week, 52 weeks a year, we present programs filled with verifiable news and unique interviews on Fukushima and every other aspect of the nuclear issue, be it coming from Japan, the U.S., India, Canada, Australia, the EU, UK, or anywhere else. That's why you need to know the nuclear news, and that's why Nuclear Hot Seat comes your way every week. We don't take ads. We have no underwriting. We are supported exclusively by the generosity of listeners like you. So please, take a moment to help us out. You can make a donation of any size by going to nuclearhotseat.com and clicking on the big red donate button. And for an easy, inexpensive way to help us meet our expenses, consider what we call the Starbucks donation. Buy the show the equivalent of a cup of coffee every month. We have everything set up for you to send us a $5 monthly donation. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the big green donate button. Your support now and through the year will help us keep bringing you the best, most up-to-date information on what's going on with nuclear issues around the world. So thank you for listening, thank you for caring, and know that whatever you can do to help us grow to reach out into the world, you have my gratitude. And now, here is Nuclear Hot Seat's Fukushima Anniversary Special, Voices from Japan, Child Thyroid Cancer at Fukushima. 7 years since the Fukushima nuclear disaster began, the triple meltdown continues to leak deadly radiation into the air, the Pacific Ocean, the food chain, the groundwater, and, of course, people's bodies. One aspect of the story of Fukushima that is hard to get comprehensive information about is that of the child thyroid cancer rates in and around Fukushima Prefecture. That's why we chose the topic for this year's Nuclear Hot Seat, Voices from Japan, looking at the problems facing the families and their children, as well as the manipulations of the Japanese government to cover up the extent of the problems. We are guided on this journey by Beverly Finlay Kaneko. She co-founded Families for Safe Energy and has been active in helping share information from Japan to the rest of the world. This year marks her sixth involvement in Nuclear Hot Seat's Voices from Japan. Beverly and I spoke on Sunday, March 4, 2018. It was once said it takes 100 years before people can return and live safely in an area where there has been a nuclear accident. It has now been only 7 years since the Fukushima disaster. What is the situation there now?
Even though the Japanese government has already spent a total of $2.5 billion for decontamination, there's a limit to what can be done, and people still can't live safely like they used to. Radiation levels have gone down quite a bit in comparison to right after the accident due to natural decay and decontamination. But it's impossible to clean up mountains and rivers, and there are many roads and parks where the radiation levels remain high. There are also sources that emit radiation on a daily basis in one way or another. Fukushima Daiichi, decontamination debris storage areas, and waste incinerators. People who live in contaminated areas have to be careful to avoid spots where radiation is high. It's like they're living under restrictions. One of Yuji's guides this year was photographer Shinshu Hida, who we spoke with for last year's Nuclear Hot Seat, Voices from Japan. He lives in Miharu, which is about 31 miles away from Fukushima Daiichi. He said that when the wind picks up from the east, dust blown from the direction of Fukushima Daiichi causes radiation levels to go up in Miharu. He has to be careful going outside on those days. The government's policy is to force individuals who have returned to be responsible for their own radiation awareness and protection, rather than providing an environment where they can live free from radioactive exposure. This is the government's liability avoidance policy, also known as neglect.
I'd like to remind listeners that last year, the government of Japan instituted a policy to return people living in areas closest to Fukushima Daiichi to their homes. We cover that issue in detail on Nuclear Hot Seat number 298, the Fukushima 6th Anniversary Voices from Japan, which posted on March 7, 2017.
There are still many people who are refusing to return because radiation levels remain high. Also, because important lifestyle infrastructure like supermarkets and hospitals aren't sufficient. But time is running out for many of these people because government compensation has been cut off and they can't make ends meet. Even though they don't want to, many are finding no other choice than returning to their homes.
This policy clearly violates human rights. Where is the opposition?
It's nearly non-existent.
Why is that?
The media doesn't cover the problem, and there's little awareness and discussion among the Japanese public. The media only features positive images like restored Fukushima and beautiful Fukushima. The only thing the government and the media want from Fukushima citizens is superficial smiling faces, and the suffering of victims spoils this happy image of renewal that the government wants to promote. So people who've lost their homes, jobs, and health to the dangers of radiation are forced to be silent about their struggles. The complete apathy of the Japanese public imposes a cold and cruel atmosphere on the victims. The end result is that the Japanese government and TEPCO profit from the victims' silence and misery.
How much of this do you personally feel is part of a strategy being used by the Japanese government to protect the financial potential of the upcoming 2020 Tokyo Olympics?
My feeling is that holding events in Fukushima in particular is a cynical PR ploy that totally disregards the health effects of the accident on people that can't just leave after 2 weeks' time. Frankly, it also bothers me when people argue that sending top-class athletes into the contaminated area is wrong and don't mention anything about the children and people living there. It bothered me in the Brazil Olympics with the whole contaminated waterways issue, and it bothers me with the Tokyo Olympics and the whole idea of holding events in Fukushima. It probably will do very little harm to the athletes, in my opinion. It's the children and the families that have been there since the beginning and who are being sent back to live in still contaminated areas that are and still continue to suffer. The athletes are both ignorant and complicit and serve to normalize the harm being done to long-term residents.
Against that background, this year's Voices from Japan will be a two-part series. This week, we will look at the pediatric thyroid cancer situation as it affects families and children. And in a future episode, we will examine the plight of farmers working in contaminated soil. Let's start with a basic question. Beverly, before taking into account Fukushima's impact, how prevalent is pediatric thyroid cancer as a disease?
It occurs much less often than thyroid cancer in adults. The figure is only one or two cases in a million for children.
And even though radiation causes many illnesses, pediatric thyroid cancer is one of the few that is actually recognized by the World Health Organization.
Yes, compared to other illnesses, it's really hard for kids to develop thyroid cancer in an ordinary environment. So it's easy to identify the origin of the disease as coming from ionizing radiation from a nuclear accident. By comparison, lung cancer, for example, can be caused by other environmental contaminants like smog or smoking. So it's difficult to single out a nuclear accident as the cause.
And the thyroid acts like a sponge for the ionizing radiation emitted during a nuclear accident. This is another reason thyroid cancer is known as a radiation disease.
So screening for pediatric thyroid cancer after a nuclear accident has a really important role in protecting children's health.
At least the Fukushima prefectural government has a screening program. Can you bring us up to date on the results of that survey?
Yes. The screening program ran from 2011 to 2017. During three rounds of screening, 380,000 children were examined. As I mentioned before, thyroid cancer in kids is very rare, only one in a million cases. In Fukushima, the number up until now is 194 in 380,000. That's the equivalent of one in fewer than 2,000 children. That's a huge number. And as you'll hear in our interviews today, it may be just the tip of the iceberg.
That sounds like a very inconvenient situation for the Japanese government and the nuclear industry. I bet they are working very hard to explain it away.
Well, yes, they're doing everything in their power to do just that. The Fukushima Prefectural Health Survey has an evaluation committee. They're supposed to analyze the data and give feedback to Fukushima residents. But actually, their real overarching mandate is to reassure the rest of Japan that radiation from Fukushima is nothing to worry about. Unfortunately, the results of the survey weren't very compatible with this goal. It's become a big headache for the committee. There are videos of the committee meetings up on YouTube. You can just see how flummoxed they are trying to brush the whole thing under the carpet. They go back and forth with various reasons. There's no relationship between the cancer cases and the nuclear accident. And sometimes they step on each other's toes in the process.
How so?
One of the biggest arguments on the committee is about the screening effect and overdiagnosis. Normally, thyroid cancer is not something that's found until the illness has developed to a certain stage. In one video, Dr. Shibuya from Tokyo University keeps insisting that the only reason so many cases were found was because they screened 380,000 kids all at once. If not for the screening, the tumors and abnormalities would have remained in the body harmlessly and indefinitely. He cites studies done in other countries that have shown that screening leads to overdiagnosis and unnecessary surgeries. But Dr. Suzuki of Fukushima Medical University, who is heading the survey team, contends that they followed a strict protocol and only operated on children who absolutely needed it. Cases where the cancer has spread to the lymph nodes, those that are near the vocal cords, and so on. Some kids were clear or only had tiny lesions in the first round of testing, but then they were caught in the second and the third round surveys because their abnormalities had changed so dramatically. It would appear that the cancers that have been treated up until now are actually too serious and aggressive to explain away with arguments like the screening effect. By the way, Dr. Suzuki is no longer on the Prefectural Health Survey Evaluation Committee.
Does the committee have other tricks up its sleeve?
Of course. In addition to the screening effect argument, the evaluation committee is pursuing other clever tactics to try and make it seem like there are fewer cases of thyroid cancer. They're removing patients from the framework of the program and making the results completely confidential, citing privacy issues. They are even talking about shrinking or abolishing the program altogether. No matter what the result of the screening program, the evaluation committee chairman always concludes, it's difficult to find a link between the nuclear accident and the pediatric thyroid cancer cases in Fukushima. It kind of reminds me of the argument that there is no link between the ready availability of AR-15s and the prevalence of school shootings in this country. Of course, there are people in Fukushima who are raising their voices against the evaluation committee, its illogical behavior and plans, and its lack of compassion.
That brings us to our first interview with Chikako Chiba. She is a representative of the Ajisai no Kai support group for families with children who have thyroid cancer.
The Ajisai no Kai support group is a small circle of 12 sponsors, along with some families affected by thyroid cancer. The families all agree that the Fukushima Prefecture thyroid screening program was the reason their children's cancer was diagnosed and they were able to receive treatment. The most recent official figures indicate that 194 children have been diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And I believe that 154 patients have already undergone surgery. That's according to official announcements. The Fukushima Prefectural Screening Program divides the diagnosis into categories. A, A2, B, and C. The patients designated as B or C further observation rather than immediate treatment are not handled under the framework of the Fukushima program. Follow-up medical care is dealt with under national health insurance or other medical insurance programs. So if these children do develop thyroid cancer in the future, it will not be counted in the Fukushima survey. It's said that there are probably around 2,000 children like this that require further observation. Among the families that I am acquainted with, there are also young people who were initially screened here in Fukushima, but left the prefecture for work or school or whatever and had surgery near their workplace or university. These patients have also been left out of the survey totals.
That's terrible.
When we're told that pediatric thyroid cancer is usually one or two cases in 1 million, and Fukushima's occurrence rate is already 1 in 2 to 3,000, what are we supposed to think? This is a very serious problem. Recently, the issue of overdiagnosis and unnecessary surgery of merely potential cancer has come under discussion. This makes parents wonder if their child has undergone unnecessary surgery due to overdiagnosis and had something removed that might never have become cancerous. It makes them anxious. Lately, Dr. Suzuki of Fukushima Medical University said that among the surgeries he has been responsible for, there were no cases where a wait-and-see approach would have been better. Dr. Suzuki probably has the most experience examining thyroid cases in Japan. In my opinion, he is the top authority on the subject. This statement hasn't made it into the mainstream. He insists that he has followed proper medical ethics in treating patients and has neither engaged in overdiagnosis nor conducted any unnecessary surgeries. The patients don't think they were misdiagnosed or were operated on unnecessarily either. They feel that the screening enabled their cancer to be detected so that they could receive proper treatment. But now, the Fukushima Prefecture Citizens Health Screening Committee is considering reducing the screening program. We have requested many times that the screening program not be reduced. If we don't continue with screening, all of the data that has been collected until now will become worthless. Over and over, We have been calling for screenings, such as the school group screenings, to be continued. As of last year, we put in a request to the prefectural government. We've also been lobbying local communities to continue the screenings for the sake of their residents' health.
What has been the response to your efforts?
Usually, there is understanding. But then groups of experts like the Fukushima Pediatrics Association and international thyroid oncologists have made recommendations to stop the screenings. Unfortunately, it seems like this is who is being listened to, and things are not moving in the direction we would like to see.
Do you think the silence on the part of the patients' families, which is understandable due to privacy issues, contributes to the move away from screening?
We are very protective of the families in our support group. It's a very delicate problem. If the media were to find out who the cancer patients were, they might get very pushy and invade their privacy. And then there's neighborhood gossip to worry about. Of course, the parents' feelings come into play. If I were one of those parents, I would be devastated. There are no words. They have nowhere to turn to for support. You'd think that they could share their feelings within the family, but I've heard of cases where even siblings don't know that their brother or sister has had cancer surgery. If big sister or big brother gets cancer, the parents try to protect the other children from the worry and anxiety that they will get the disease too. It is so painful for the parents, but also for the cancer patients themselves. Where can they find room for their feelings?
That was Chikako Chiba of the Ajisai no Kai Thyroid Cancer Family Support Group. I found her testimony heartbreaking. What the families are actually going through in Fukushima as a result of the exposure of their children to the radiation.
Yes, the silent suffering of families was made really clear to me in an NHK documentary that I watched about the thyroid cancer situation while I was doing background preparation for this episode of Nuclear Hot Seat.
I thought NHK was the government mouthpiece.
Yes, but NHK journalists do some good work on the subject. Unfortunately, it's usually aired during off hours and it's not representative of main coverage. And this program was crafted carefully to not assign blame to anyone or outwardly question the government's stance. One kind of has to read between the lines.
So what left an impression on you in the NHK thyroid special?
Well, NHK interviewed two couples whose children had had surgery for thyroid cancer. Their voices were masked, their heads were completely blacked out, and the setting was darkened so you couldn't recognize who they were. They were protecting their children's privacy. And they were also avoiding being recognized so they could prevent criticism from the community. To me, it almost seemed like they were corporate whistleblowers on 60 Minutes or some kind of shady criminal characters providing inside information, not victims of a medical disaster who deserve our compassion.
They also deserve legal protection, which brings us to our next interviewee. Toshio Yanagihara is an attorney who has been seeking to protect the rights of Fukushima families with children to live in a safe environment. He has been doing this work since early on in the aftermath of the nuclear meltdown. We spoke with Yanagihara-san in Nuclear Hot Seat number 145 on April 1st of 2014 about his Fukushima collective evacuation lawsuit. In that legal action, he represented families who left the prefecture, arguing that both the national and prefectural governments neglected to provide measures to prevent exposure to radiation and that they were responsible for causing unnecessary exposure to children. Yanagihara-san continues to be a vocal critic of the government's negligent approach to looking after children's health. He raises awareness about the many problems with the Fukushima Prefectural Health Survey, particularly the manipulation of statistics and scientific data.
We have filed the radiation exposure prevention lawsuit against the central and prefectural governments because they neglected to prevent children from being exposed to radiation after the nuclear accident. We are arguing that the government's initial do-nothing approach was illegal. For example, delaying evacuation, neglecting to distribute potassium iodide tablets, raising the official safe level of exposure from 1 to 20 millisieverts a year, and hiding the speedy emergency radiation monitoring system data all contributed to unnecessary exposure in children. I think we can add the mismanagement of the Fukushima Prefecture Health Survey to the list of problems caused by the government. Citizens have not been given proper evaluations and have been ill-informed. This has led to an unnecessary increase in harm. I think we could even add this to the list of complaints in our lawsuit. We hope to shed light on the dangerous health consequences of radiation exposure by forcing an accounting of the health damages out into the open. The Fukushima Prefecture Health Survey is supposedly putting out crucial data, but for some reason, the confirmed cases of thyroid cancer have been decreasing. Normally, we would expect to see an increase in thyroid cancer cases, but the occurrence rates have seemed to taper off. About 5 to 6 years after Chernobyl, thyroid cancer rates steadily rose, but Fukushima seems to be different. However, the data shows that there are still 2,500 people who were classified for follow-up observation. We have discovered that if any of those patients have developed malignancies since the survey was finished, they have not been counted. The number of cancer cases have been manipulated lower by using statistical dirty tricks like this. We feel that if a proper accounting were taken, the number of cases would show an upward swing. I think that there is probably a lot of health damage occurring. Thyroid cancer is symbolic of radiation-caused illnesses. If we can grasp the situation with thyroid cancer, we can surmise the occurrence of various other illnesses, such as leukemia and cardiovascular and brain diseases. The Fukushima Health Survey could be the most important data proving that radiation causes health damage. But without the follow-up patients' histories included, it becomes misleading. Everyone would like to know what happened to the 2,500 people who haven't been counted. But the survey committee won't release the data.
Attorney Toshio Yanagihara. We'll hear more from him in a moment. Beverly, it's shocking that they are trying to make the scale of harm from the nuclear accident appear smaller by paring down the parameters of the thyroid survey.
Yes, it is. The only patients that they have officially counted are the ones who required immediate treatment. According to Yanagihara-san and Chiba-san, there are anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 children whose cysts and nodules were above a certain threshold but didn't require immediate follow-up or surgery. These cases are further monitored and treated outside the boundaries of the program and are not counted. And as Chiba-san mentioned, when people move out of the prefecture, they're no longer counted. I wonder about all the people who evacuated Fukushima voluntarily. How many of their kids are sick? And what about people in their 20s and older adults? And then there are people in neighboring prefectures who also suffered contamination.
Just last week, On March 1st of 2018, NHK World reported that kids who had already been treated for thyroid cancer have been experiencing recurrence, and that those cases aren't being counted either. Hisako Sakiyama, the director of the 311 Fund for Children with Thyroid Cancer, said that a survey done by the fund noted that some children had relapsed. She further explains that experts at a recent meeting didn't mention those cases.
And there was more detail about that survey in an article on March 1st in Japanese in the Mainichi Shimbun. Among 114 thyroid cancer patients from Fukushima and neighboring prefectures that had received aid from the 311 Fund, it appears that the cancers outside the prefecture are more advanced. Only 2% of the children from Fukushima needed more aggressive treatment, when 37% of those from outside of Fukushima were at risk for recurrence. Fukushima children had the benefit of early detection due to the Fukushima Health Survey, but kids from outside the prefecture didn't. Therefore, they didn't get any treatment until their cancers were further developed. Some activists feel that, to be fair, all children in the Kanto region should be tested.
For those of us outside of Japan, explain to us what you mean by the Kanto region.
That includes prefectures south and southwest of Fukushima, and that also includes the greater Tokyo metropolitan area and Yokohama, where my family and I were during the earthquake and the nuclear meltdown.
So it sounds like there is a geographic aspect to the way the government is skewing and screwing with the statistics.
Yes, there's no end to the ways they've tried to minimize the results. To borrow a term from political science, there's been a bit of gerrymandering going on in the representation of thyroid cancer trends. If the survey were to be meaningful, it would have to follow where the plume traveled, not just the boundaries of Fukushima Prefecture. The plume is pretty well documented with after-the-fact mapping of contamination by the government and groups like SafeCast, as well as modeling of the plume by volcanologists and meteorologists. The survey would also have to have a control group. Instead, the survey's been limited to the artificial boundaries of Fukushima and parsed into neighborhoods. More recently, they've tried to simplify things into the coastal, central, and mountainous areas of the prefecture in order to further blur the picture.
You know, it's an old saying that there are three kinds of liars. There are liars, there are damned liars, and there are statisticians. It looks like the statisticians have been hard at work to skew the numbers and our understanding of the impact of the Fukushima disaster, especially on the children.
Well, that's their job, isn't it?
I don't know that that was in the job description, but that certainly seems to be the job that they are doing. Let's continue with our interview with Yanagihara-san, because he spoke on the subject of DNA testing of tissue samples taken from Fukushima thyroid patients.
So we don't know what happened to the wait and see patients. That sounds like a big hole in the statistical picture. I've also heard that there is some DNA research that is being done outside of the public purview. Can you tell us a little about this?
At first, they didn't admit it, but Fukushima Medical University also engaged in DNA research with the tissue removed from children during surgeries at the university. They received consent from the patients to preserve the samples and analyze the DNA. They have finally admitted to creating a data bank. Research is necessary, so I think most patients probably felt that if at least their personal information was protected. Fukushima Prefectural Medical University sent the tissue samples to Nagasaki University. Dr. Shunichi Yamashita, the one who claimed that 100 millisievert dose of radiation per year is no problem, is the one who is conducting the DNA analysis.
I want to remind the listeners here that Yamashita is the one who said that radiation doesn't harm people who laugh and smile.
Yes, that's him. One would think that if the DNA analysis results were favorable to his assertions, he would have published them quite a while ago. I mean, it would provide solid evidence that thyroid cancer is not caused by nuclear radiation. But they haven't said anything. The Prefecture Health Survey Committee has been besieged by problems. If this data shows undeniable proof of their position, then why aren't they proudly announcing the results?
I've heard that the researchers at Nagasaki University are preserving the tissue samples and data as their own personal property.
Yes, but legally, if they have received written consent from the patients to use the tissue removed in surgery, it isn't a problem. But since the illness in question is suspected to be linked to a national disaster caused by a nuclear accident, it's unthinkable for one research group to selfishly monopolize the samples for their own use. The legal phrase describing this situation is public order and morality. Since it can be assumed that the patients gave their consent for the greater good, the assertion that the research group owns the samples is invalid. The samples are truly public property. Decent researchers should have access in order to study how DNA is affected. The samples shouldn't be monopolized by a small group of people to manipulate as they see fit for their own benefit. No one thought this kind of accident would ever happen. So no one ever thought to make laws governing this situation. If we use common sense, however, monopolizing the samples for personal use is not right. The tissue donors should probably come out and state that they did not give their samples to benefit private research. They have a right to demand that their organs be used properly, since they made a contribution for Japan, the world, and the future, so that an accident like Fukushima wouldn't happen again. I think it would be much stronger for the donors to say this than for an ordinary person. The patients need to raise their voices. In order to minimize harm from nuclear accidents, the whole country should be studying the problem, rather than just a handful of individuals doing their own private research.
Attorney Toshio Yanagihara. Yanagihara-san is very concerned that only a handful of researchers have access to the tissue samples taken from patients. Can you elaborate on this, Beverly?
Yes. The researchers at Nagasaki University haven't shared the results of their studies with the citizens of the prefecture or with the Health Survey Evaluation Committee. They have commented on their findings at academic conferences, however. In one video, Dr. Suzuki of Fukushima Prefectural Medical University explains that the DNA in Fukushima samples differs from Chernobyl DNA. He then asserts that Fukushima thyroid cancer was therefore not caused by the nuclear accident. Another researcher from Nagasaki University makes the same claim on the NHK thyroid special, but there's no peer review. There's been no outside examinations of the samples. No one knows whether their claims are true or not. There are a multitude of reasons that have been concocted to refute the link between thyroid cancer and radiation exposure in Fukushima. For example, they say that the amount of radiation emitted during the Fukushima accident was much less than that of Chernobyl, but the amount of radioactive iodine wasn't measured. In fact, measurements were stopped. At the time of the accident, the government's Nuclear Emergency Response Headquarters put a stop to gathering samples, announcing, "Collection of radiation data will cause anxiety and prejudice among families and local communities as well as to the person gathering the data.
That's just nuts.
A professor at Hirosaki University was measuring radioactive iodine exposure in individuals soon after the accident, and Fukushima Prefecture ordered him to stop. They cited causing unease among prefectural citizens as their reason. And with that, a chance to collect crucial data about radiation exposure was lost forever.
What possible merit could there be in preventing data collection and underestimating the level of damage?
Well, of course, the prefectural and central governments want to achieve the recovery of Fukushima as soon as possible. Local areas want to stem the tide of people leaving the area permanently, and they want to revive local industries in order to avoid the collapse of their communities. The central government wants to limit the amount of compensation that has to be paid out. If they were to have to pay for all of the health damages, all of the loss of property, and people's livelihoods, the costs could run into the trillions of dollars. The fact is that local humanitarian groups have already had to step up and fill in where the government is falling short. There are many citizen science efforts in radiation measurement, as you know, like the SafeCast group that you featured last week. And there are nonprofits that help families and children. One would think that these organizations would be winding down activities since the official view is that Fukushima is well on its way to recovery. But some groups are actually expanding their services to pick up the slack. The Tadachine Iwaki Citizens Radiation Monitoring Center is one such facility. They've been offering various services like radiation monitoring of food for several years, but recently they opened a new clinic.
Nuclear Hot Seat spoke with Tadachine's medical director, Dr. Misao Fujita, to get his perspective on the thyroid cancer situation and how local citizens have taken the initiative when the government has let them down.
In the past, other than Chernobyl, we haven't had any experiences like Fukushima. In Chernobyl, we saw an increase of thyroid cancer at the 5 and 6 year marks. If Fukushima follows the same trajectory, we should be seeing an increase in cancer from now. So I think we should be enriching our screening programs.
Speaking of screening, there has been a lot of discussion about overdiagnosis and unnecessary treatment. How do you feel about that?
I have doubts that there is any overdiagnosis. I think there are probably some cases that are overdiagnosed, but many that aren't. I don't think we are at a point where we can assert that the cases up until now have been fundamentally overdiagnosed. What is being argued is that if it hadn't been for screening, that even in children, the suspected cancers wouldn't have been discovered and would have harmlessly remained latent. I have serious doubts that in children, such cancers would have been there in the first place.
What is your opinion of the conclusion that there is no connection between the nuclear accident and these cases of thyroid cancer?
Well, the cancer cases we've had up until now are unusual. I don't think we can come to any kind of conclusion yet. We don't know. And since we don't know for certain, the government should not be cutting back on a Fukushima Prefectural Health Management Survey. From the standpoint of preventative medicine, we should be continuing the program.
Tell us a little about why Tadachine got started and about your activities at present.
The screenings done by the prefecture were not thorough, and they weren't very kind. Even from the beginning, they were hiding data, and there was a real lack of trust. So citizens decided they needed to look after themselves. A group of local moms started this organization because they were worried about radiation. I can understand how they felt. There were a lot of people who were very concerned, and many who did not trust what the prefecture and the central government were doing. We hope we can continue filling in and supporting the community where government has failed.
Have you come across any unusual cases here at Tarachine?
There have been several children who have needed follow-up thyroid screening sooner than they were getting. Not immediate, but 3 to 6 months rather than a year, for example. Another thing that we see a lot of, which is not really talked about, is a mental health aspect. There were many cases of mental distress. Many children suffer anguish because they have gotten caught in the middle of family strife, such as divorce and separation, as a result of the nuclear accident.
What kinds of screenings do you offer at Tarachine?
Our main strengths are thyroid screening and urinalysis to test for cesium. We also offer whole body counter tests for radiation and typical medical tests like electrocardiograms and blood tests. Our focus is the health effects of the nuclear accident. If a few years down the line, the effects of the accident really become less of a concern, that's fine. But in the meantime, we must continue our efforts. For example, here in Iwaki, the radiation levels have subsided, and it is not really such a big problem living here. But there are people who lived in extremely contaminated areas for several days right after the accident. And there are those who are being compelled to return to areas where the radiation levels are still high, up to 20 millisieverts per year. So they will need their health monitored. I think we still have a long path ahead of us providing these medical services.
That was Dr. Misao Fujita, clinic director at the Tarachine Citizens Radiation Monitoring Center. Beverly, how can our listeners contribute to Tarachine?
They have a web page in English that gives donation information. I'd also like to suggest the 311 Fund for Children with Thyroid Cancer or the Ajisai no Kai Thyroid Cancer Support Group. All of these three are really good groups to support.
We will have the links and contact information up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 350. Beverly, I know you have a lot of thoughts that we haven't covered regarding the situation in Fukushima. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
When another nuclear accident happens, wherever it happens, the government and the utility will probably be just like Japan's and try their hardest to minimize the harm caused by radiation, all the while trying to erase the existence of the victims. America is no exception, as we hear week after week after week here on Nuclear Hot Seat. Whether it's cancer silently killing members of the communities nearby radioactive World War II waste in the Westlake landfill, or Native Americans having their water supply spoiled by uranium mining. In Japan, the victims suffer a double layer of abuse, much like victims of sexual assault. First is the physical and psychological harm of the effects of the disaster or rape. And next is the shame and enforced silence about one's sufferings in the face of the selfish needs of the greater community. We heard from Chiba-san about the pain of families that are suffering in silence on one hand, and on the other hand, from Yanagihara-san about the need for victims to stand up for the proper handling of their precious DNA data. My husband Yuji and I made a promise when my son and I left Japan on March 16th, 2011, that we're never going to let this happen again. And we are waiting for the day when, especially in Japan, victims of radioactive fallout can come out of the shadows and have their hashtag MeToo moment. Until then, we must show them all the compassion that they deserve.
Beverly Findlay Kaneko of Families for Safe Energy. To donate to the groups she mentioned, we will have links up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 350. Voices from Japan requires a tremendous amount of work. We started more than 3 months ago, and there are many people to thank. First and foremost, it would not be possible without the work of my co-producer, Beverly Findlay Kaneko. Great thanks to Yuji Kaneko, who conceived, scheduled, and conducted the interviews in Japan, as well as designing this episode's website logo. Beverly and Yuji would like to thank two of their dear friends in Fukushima, Setsuko Kida from Tomioka and Shinshu Kida from Miharu, for their help with this episode of Nuclear Hot Seat. We're grateful to our team of professional actors and voiceover artists for their continued support of the Voices from Japan project. Yoshi Ando voiced Dr. Misao Fujita. Hiro Matsunaga was the voice of Toshio Yanagihara. And Chihiro Kawamura gave voice to Chikako Chiba. Additional thanks to our voice talent coordinator, Kei Ogawa. Sources for this episode included NHK, Our Planet TV, the Mainichi Shimbun, and NHK World. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, March 6, 2018. Don't miss a single episode of Nuclear Hot Seat. Sign up on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, to get one email a week. That's all you get with each week's link. And a reminder that if you value the kind of information you just received from this episode, feel free to send us a donation of any size. You'll find the donate buttons, both red and green, at nuclearhotseat.com. We are copyright 2018, Libby Halevy and Hartistry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as proper attribution is provided. And if you have a story tip, a hot lead, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. This is Libby Halevy of Hartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that we can always come up with the date that a nuclear emergency starts, but we can never come up with a date that it's over, because it never is. That's it, your nuclear wake-up call. Now don't go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.
Question everything. Intelligent radio for intelligent people. UCY.TV.